Hey guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Women Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, y'all.
We are being silly over here because
yeah,
that's the only thing you have in life these days. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And we literally record this usually 4 or 5 days before it drops. And by the time it drops, so much happens.
Right? It's like we think we're topical. And no, by the time this drops, anything we're thinking is gone.
Yeah. Or people have moved on to some other crazy mess. Right now, we're in the midst of the whole Diddy bombshell, him being in jail. And then next week, who knows? He could... I don't want to say it because I don't want to put out negative energy, but I'm just glad that his many victims are finally feeling vindicated and, seeing his ass go down because, I had to have a palate cleanser. I had to watch Puppies last night.
Can I tell you that many years ago, my husband called it? I don't know what we were watching. Yeah, we were watching something very stupid or something, and he came on the screen and he went, "Nah, something's not right." And I was like, "What are you talking about? What are you talking about?" I was stupid. And he was like,
right,
"There's something wrong. There's something off. It's off." And for years I was like, "Why?" And then this came out and he was like, "Yeah." But he's always honestly, Lavetta, when you have a boyfriend, the boyfriend will meet Sal because he 100% will tell you.
Miriam, I'm going to correct you. When I have boyfriends. Okay. That's plural,
okay.
Baby.
And he will choose which one you can keep. Okay. That's how that is. Because it drives me nuts. Because sometimes I'm like, no, they're in love. They're so happy. I don't know what you're talking. Oh, fuck. You know, that's always happens. 100% of the time.
Did you say you were married? Basically, me and Sal are the same person.
You are the same person. You really are.
I'll take that as a huge compliment.
It is. And when I'm in trouble, I harass you about as much as I harass him.
No, you do not harass us. Stop that. We love you. You can harass on.
All right. You can harass me back. You know that.
Yeah. But you know who can also harass us? Our listeners.
Yes.
Guys, remember to follow us on all the things. Tell your friends and families about us. Leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store. That helps people find us. On that note, I'm going to come back to that, as you guys know. But on that note, I think we should get started this week. Yeah. And I believe you are first this week, Miriam. So who it is you? Who
it
you, as we say?
It me.
Who's your notorious woman this week that you want to share with me?
My notorious woman this week is Mary Beatrice Davidson Kenner. Have you heard of her?
No, these are some bougie. She got 5 names.
Yes.
So
she needed every single one of them. Okay.
Right.
Okay. I don't have a ton on her, y'all. So if you're like, wow, I know so much more than you did and you have a podcast, that's obnoxious. Please reach out and tell me more about her. But I have to talk about her, you guys, because of what she did.
Okay.
For women.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Now, she's born in Monroe, North Carolina, and she came from a family of inventors. Now, her father was Sidney Nathaniel Davidson, and he was someone who had patented a clothing press, which would fit in suitcases. He also patented a window washer for trains and invented a stretcher with wheels for ambulances. Her grandfather, invented a light signal for trains. Now, here is the difficulty, if you will, is that they are a black family. Mm. And so they didn't make money off of this shit. And her grandfather, literally a white man, just stole it, patented it, made the money. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm. So, and they don't know who her mother was. Her mother's not in public records because, again, she's born in 1912 and it's a black family. So, you know, they don't care as much. Let's just call that out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I find sort of inspiring, not that I should have to be inspired by this, is that they kind of never gave up. They were always creating and inventing. She was 6 years old when she attempted to develop a self-oiling hinge. Now,
six. Oh.
Six. Like, she was like, mommy and daddy are inventors and so am I. Okay, cute.
Aww.
Her family moved to Washington, D.C. in 1924. And somehow I read that she walked the corridors of the United States Patent and Trademark Office to understand, like, how inventions become patents. Like,
aww.
Right? I mean, she was like, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
She graduated from Dunbar High School in 1931. Now, she went to Howard University, but she had some financial difficulties. Basically, she ran out of money, is my guess. Mm-hmm. And so she had to drop out after 18 months. So she never actually received her college degree or any sort of professional training, only because no one, you know, they had these bootstraps and they were trying to pull them up. But then the white man kept stealing their shoes. That's what happened.
Yeah, because imagine if her father was able to get paid for those patents, she'd have no trouble.
He'd be like, I'm paying for college. Of course. Yeah. So now it was also because, like, also she couldn't really sneak in. She was a black woman at a time when women in general weren't allowed to be in scientific communities. Like, they had to, you know, we have examples and exceptions of that, but in general, the answer was no, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So during World War II, she found a job with the federal government. She worked for the Census Bureau and the General Accounting Office. She would also, and I can't tell if this was like a job or like she just like did it, is she chaperoned younger women to attend military base dances in DC. Like, and I read it as though it was like a job. Like, you know, you got a certain amount of money.
It's amazing.
I would like that job. I would be obnoxious though. I'd like dance in between people. I'd be like, I'm making my money.
Like, you know? Hands where I can see them. Hands where I can see them.
Hands up. Hands up. Look at each other, but don't look at each other too much. You know. So one night while chaperoning, she met a soldier and she married him in 1945. But they divorced in 1950. So in 1950 is when she became a professional florist and she ran a flower shop through the 1970s.
Oh.
Then in 1951, she married a renowned heavyweight boxer named James Jabbo Kenner.
Oh.
Okay. Right. So they lived in McLean, Virginia, near the Kennedy family complex. Interesting.
Oh, because if he was a successful boxer, then maybe they had some money.
I mean, I think maybe. Here's the thing. They fostered five boys.
Aww.
Five boys. And one of the boys they adopted named Woodrow. So, interesting. Now,
Woodrow, that's an old school name, right?
Yeah, right. It reminds me of the president I don't like.
Yeah, the racist one.
That's the one. God, I remember being in high school. Like, no, thinking like, oh, he's a good man. Oh, yes. And I'm reading because a lot of his policies were great. Like a lot of them were. Like, they really were. And then you get to like black people and he like, oh, he's a bad man.
Like, yeah, it makes you wonder if like some black girl, like when he was little, was like, no.
Yeah. No, it was really specific.
And yeah, it's very specific.
I went from
people.
Like loving him to hating him because it was like,
it's very odd.
Yes. It was very odd. Exactly. Like, yeah, he was in love with some black girl who was like better than him. And she told him that.
Some girl probably just laughed at him and then he held it against all black people.
That sounds like America, doesn't it?
That sounds like a dude, too, you know.
Yeah, God. For sure. Speaking of great women, so in 1954, now she had actually completed this invention in the 20s, okay? But she didn't have the money to do the patent application. But in 1954, she completed the patent application for the invention of the adjustable sanitary belt. What?
So I've heard of her, but I don't know all of this. This is great.
So again, if her father had been able to make the money off of the hard work and brilliance that he had and did, this would have changed women's lives 30 years earlier.
Years earlier, yep.
Okay. So even those white racist women would have benefited from not being so racist.
Bigotry hurts us all.
There you go. There you go.
It does. Yep.
And before this, like, they were just like shoving like cloths and rags. They had like, can you imagine? And this is what a great way to keep women down, right? Once a month, you can't really go anywhere. Because you're going to bleed. And it's going to be horribly embarrassing because we're never going to talk about the fact that 52% of the population does this once a month.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So, in 1956, the patent was granted. However, the company that first showed interest in her patent was called the Sonap Pack Company. They went down there. They were like, yes, we love it. So good. And then met her.
Mm.
Uh-huh. And then they rejected it because it turns out she's a black woman. And they literally said to her face, well, no, we can't because you're a black woman. What in the actual fuck? Okay. So here's the thing. Not
I
only
hate it
did
here. Aliens
know,
come and take me away.
Let's go to another place.
But no probing, okay? Aliens.
Yeah,
no.
Let's be very clear about that, okay?
Just send me through the wormhole to another.
Yeah. Yeah.
A better version of Earth.
So the invention was described as an eliminator for, quote, chafing and irritation normally caused by devices of its class. Now, it also, so basically, like, can you imagine? Okay, sorry, I'm so mad. And then her patent expired. It became public domain. And then it became manufactured freely. So this is why, like, I don't have a ton on her, but like, put her in the fucking history books immediately.
It's like, also now, it's financial theft. It's like legacy theft. It's like it's thievery. It's like, let's slow these people down so we can just steal their shit.
Right. Which is why, right, reparations, like her children's children should be generationally wealthy.
Yeah.
Like, did I just say generationally wealthy?
Just like the Aunt Jemima people.
There you go.
Campbell Soup people.
Yep. We could probably go on for a long time.
The J.P. Morgan people.
Yeah, you know? I guess it's true. Right? Like, this is what we're calling out. Put her in the fucking history books.
But see, that's why reparations is such a hard... other than the anti-blackness, but it's like the amount of money that it would take
to make black people in America.
We could, but it's like that's what they don't understand, and that the people who are in opposition to it, because it's also like, well, let's just start something. It's like what they did. People are like, oh, not Nazi Germany, but it's like the German government's like, of course we couldn't replace the wealth that was stolen and the loss that occurred, but we can start to address it. We can have a gesture towards it, like with money.
Did we want an example of reparations? Because my grandmother received money from Germany for her whole life.
Yeah.
Jews got reparations as well. They deserved 100,000%. That said, that means reparations can work. And Germany is a very wealthy country. They're fine.
Yeah. And it's not like what she received made up for what she lost. Like, that's not possible.
Right.
But like,
no, exactly.
The German government knows. It's like, it's a gesture to try
it's
and
a
make
gesture.
People.
It, like, it, and it helped her in her old age,
oh yeah,
right?
Of course.
Because what she should have received from her family, it's the same fucking thing.
Right.
That's always my point with it. It's the same fucking thing. I don't see the difference because yep. there is no difference. That's
well, you have to admit that there was harm, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So,
and that's why our country will never do it.
Yeah.
Because they really won't. We're doubling down on slavery still. Like, what the fuck?
Don't even get me started, but like,
I mean,
yeah. So you don't know what happened to.
Not really. So, well, I know she later invented a modification of the sanitary belt. Thank you, girl. That included a moisture resistant pocket, right? We need that
yeah,
because yeast
oh yeah.
infections. Mm-hmm. Girl is on her. And this is why women, okay, should be the ones inventing this shit because
yeah.
men don't know what to do. Okay.
Right.
Because the current pads, they just found out. Can I just go on for days about this? Did you
please.
Know this?
No, okay. I did not know this, I don't think.
So they have, with the, you know, the 10, remember how the pads like last for 10 hours?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And every woman thinks to herself, I am the exception to this rule because my pad
right.
lasts 42 minutes if I'm lucky, right? On those heavy days.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
42
yeah.
minutes, I better run. Okay.
Oh,
because
God.
They were testing it on water. Scientists. Were test. They don't know the difference between blood and water. What?
It's like the comedian who had the joke about the 1,000 tampons. We posted it on our social media a while ago about like
100 tampons.
100,
yes.
Yeah, they don't know how because it's men and they're like, ugh, lady stuff. Would 10 tampons be okay?
They,
it's like what?
And they tied them together. What in the fuck? I'm cursing a lot today. I know, but I mean, come on, you can't
ask a
woman. Nearby?
Right. And it's such an essential part of a woman's experience.
Oh, 100%.
And it's like,
yeah.
you guys just can't ask. Like, just ask. Like, don't guess.
Just ask. Just like, yeah. Yes, blood is viscous. Do you know what that means,
yeah.
scientist? Mm.
They were testing it with water.
Water. And that's
oh,
the
like
10
the
hours.
Commercial.
The 10 hours. Look, right? The commercial with like the little food coloring. Yeah. Okay. All right. So in an interview, she said, quote, one day I was, because I, let's just deep dive into this part. One day I was contacted by a company that expressed an interest in marketing my idea. I was jubilant. I saw houses, cars, and everything about to come my way. End quote. And then then she says, new quote, sorry to say, when they found out I was black, their interest dropped. The representative went back to New York and informed me the company was no longer interested. Mm. Let me tell you, though, between 1956 and 1987, she received a total of 5 patents for her household and personal item creations, which is the largest number of patents held by a black woman. Now, this didn't slow her down. I would have cried for a week and then moved to Italy. But she was like...
Well, she had to, right?
Right.
She had to pick up and move on. But like, I'm like Althea Gibson. Where
yeah.
the money at? Run me my
yeah.
money, motherfuckers.
Where's
like,
the money?
Yeah.
So in 1976, she patented an attachment for a walker. That like for like a walker wheelchair situation.
Yeah.
That included a hard surface tray and a soft pocket for carrying items. We've seen these walkers.
Yeah, my grandmother.
Yep. Yeah.
Had one. Yep. She had
a
couple.
She made that.
And when I started helping my grandparents and I was like, this is such a great idea. There's a little pocket here.
Yeah. Of course, right?
Yeah.
It's genius. She shares the patent on the toilet tissue holder. So basically the modern toilet paper roll. Patented in 1982.
No.
Okay. Yes. She held a patent on a back washer that could be mounted on the shower or bathtub wall. Like it's known also as a back wash. patented in 1987. The carrier attachment, so she developed multiple sclerosis in 1959, and that's what inspired that. Her sister apparently made a lot of board games, one of which in the 1980s called Family Tree Edition, which is cute, but I think she did more board games than that.
Yeah.
And then I'm not really sure what, but she died January 13th, 2006. At 93 years old.
Oh my God.
So she lived a long, productive, amazing life.
Oh. And just, wow. Wow. Like, and you, oh, I'm sorry, you said she developed MS in the 1950s?
1959. She continued to develop things though. So, and she lived to be 93. So she lived another.
I hope she had like a lot of joy in her life. And also I would imagine that it's incredibly satisfying to create something, like have an idea in your head, you sketch it out, you get a patent, and then you actually see it working. Like,
and people
using it. It's
got to
be incredibly like satisfying, but also you should get paid for your labor.
Yeah.
And your ideas. Yeah. You know, that's 100. That's a capitalistic way.
I mean, that's like, you want us to live here or not. You know what I mean? You either allow us to be capitalists, all of us, or, you know, be honest that you don't want a segment of the population to succeed. Just say those words out loud.
Yeah. I mean, it's so obvious. It's like, we all preach into the choir, but that is amazing.
Thanks for letting me complain, you guys. I know you hear me and I appreciate it.
They're like, preach on, sister.
Yeah.
like it's a baby Yoda gif.
Oh.
Preach it, sister. Anyway.
Oh, he's so cute.
Sister, how would Yoda say it? Preach. Sister? I don't know.
Sister on preach. I don't know.
We're such a bad Star Wars fan.
Sorry, guys.
That's because I'm a Trekkie. Boom!
Yeah, no,
I'm just kidding.
I know she was going to say that.
So thank you so much for sharing story. So now we're on from like an inspiring, smart, like creatively vibrant Black woman to a smart, loudmouth white lady.
Okay.
Who, listen, I love a loudmouth lady. Come on. Yes. My notorious woman this week is Martha Mitchell. Have you ever heard of Martha Mitchell?
No.
I hadn't really heard of her either. I don't know where I got this idea. I think because we're in the spirit of the political stuff and I don't want it to be just like, oh, people in politics or people like I kind of wanted to be a lot more interesting because politics is just as messy and ghetto as every other industry or category. So
facts.
That doesn't always have to do with elections, but this kind of did. So Martha Mitchell, this is going to be fun. Martha Mitchell was born Martha Elizabeth Beale on September 2nd, 1918 in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, to George Beale, a cotton broker, and Ari Beale, a speech and drama teacher.
Oh, okay.
So solidly middle class, probably slightly upper middle class. So she comes from what we would call a good family back then.
Okay.
Now, growing up, Martha was described as friendly and extremely talkative. So I can relate because this is basically, she probably been talking since she came out of the womb. Martha, even though she struggled to read aloud as a young child because she was dyslexic. And this is at a time when they didn't know what that meant, really.
Right.
So as a child, she sang in the church choir and her mother hoped that she would become an opera singer. She loved the arts and dreamed of becoming an actress.
Oh, Lord.
So she studied at the Stevens College in Columbia after graduating from high school. But her parents, because they come from more traditional, even though her mother's a drama teacher.
Yeah.
You know, this would be the late 30s, early 40s. So they're like, acting, really? I don't know. And Martha's attractive, but she wouldn't, I don't know if she was movie star attractive. I would
That's
say
what
that.
They said about me, Lovetta. Go That's on, true. I'm fine.
No, they didn't say that about you. No. And I think,
yes, they did.
You know, who's around you really, really matters, because I think she would have been, she's beautiful enough. And she could have been a great character actress too, because she had a lot of personality.
Listen, that's where I was thrown into. It's fine. The more fun parts.
Yeah. But you know, so did Lucille Ball. Like Lucille Ball looked one way, but she really this is pre-Lucille Ball. Lucille Ball is at this point still trying to do that traditional kind of leading lady, da da da, right? But Martha would have been a hoot, actually. I think Martha would have done very well in acting. So, but since her parents were against it, she ended up getting a BA from the University of Miami in history. You know, also this is like women, but I also think she comes from that sect where she went to college to probably get a husband. She's like a middle class white girl. Like her parents, like, go and get that husband, girl. And then if you have a history degree, you can teach. Which she did. She became a school teacher for about a year in Alabama. But she was like, this is not for me. So she moved back home, and in 1945 was hired as a secretary at the Pine Bluff Arsenal. But just 6 weeks after getting that job, she transferred to Washington with her boss. So she got a promotion.
Okay.
Now in Washington, she met an army officer by the name of Clyde Jennings. They were married in 1946, so the following year, and they lived in New York City.
Okay.
They had a son by the name of Clyde J. Jennings, but because her husband spent a lot of time away from home, the marriage struggled and eventually led to divorce in 1957, but it was a 9-year marriage, so.
That's pretty successful, I thought.
I think that's, you know, but back then, divorce wasn't really necessarily, I think it probably in the 50s it was starting to get more, but it was still not.
I gotta say, I think it is a very recent concept that like a 10-year marriage is pretty good. The idea, because up until very recently, it was like you were either married for life and you're successful, or you divorce at some point and you failed. You know, I think like that the idea of like actually life is complicated and it's long and it should be, and therefore you might have a successful marriage that decides to end and move on. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's right. I think that's true. This is why they want to roll back women's autonomy now, the certain side, because they don't want them to have. Yeah. And she and it's so interesting because she definitely was a conservative woman. So she comes from this. She's a conservative woman. But it's like. And I have a feeling that, you know, Clyde was not a rich man, but he wasn't a rich man, so it's not like she's marrying like, you know, millionaires and then getting, she's that like rich divorcee. It's not that kind of thing. I'm not getting that thing. But in 1957, that same year, she met and married a man by the name of John N. Mitchell, a high-powered New York attorney who she described as impressive because of his suaveness and intellect. So she was taken in. He was just like, she's like, oh, he's so sophisticated. And I like a sophisticated man too. I like a man like who's got a little, it's not even just swag. I like a sophisticated man that is like, oh, you know, dresses nice, that, you know,
I don't
has like,
I'm like, okay, fine, whatever.
You know, that smells nice, like, and especially if he's intelligent, he's a lawyer, like, you know, but he's just a sophisticated, the kind of man, when you're dating him, and you guys have gotten to that point, he puts his hand in the small of your back.
Oh, I
as
do
you
love
come
that.
Through,
oh,
right?
Yes. Yes.
That's what
okay.
I mean.
Okay.
Because
okay. Yeah.
Men
I'm there.
Who don't know what that means, like, they're just like, it's gentle. He's not pushing
it's,
you.
Yeah,
he's like,
no.
It's a gentle, like, that's what I mean about a sophisticated man. So
it's
I
like,
get it.
I'm sexy and I'm here for you. And you're
yeah,
like, oh.
And he's treating you like a lady. Like, you're just like, yes, yes, daddy, yes.
Delicious.
Anyway, so.
Okay.
So that's what John was to Martha.
Okay.
She now in 1961, so she met him in 57. 1961, so they got married soon after that. So it's, and I think that was kind of like a, I think that was kind of normal because she's being an unmarried woman and it's not really the thing back then. And again, she hadn't worked for at least 9 years. So it's not like she can go back into the workforce, right? So in 1961, they married soon after that. And in 1961, they had a daughter, Martha, Marty Elizabeth Mitchell.
Okay.
Now, 7 years later, after the birth of their daughter in 1968, John managed Richard Nixon's successful presidential campaign and became his attorney general when Nixon became president.
Okay.
So well, to accommodate then. Her husband's, now they're living in New York, right?
Okay.
Upper, so that's New York is,
fancy
you know,
land.
Upper class, going to fancy, fancy, yeah. But then they're going to Washington, which is fancy, but a lot more, the expectations for a Washington wife is very different.
Okay.
But so they moved to Washington, D.C., and they lived in the fashionable Watergate complex.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Now, again, I've said Martha got a great personality. She kind of reminds you of like a young Bette Midler.
Ooh, I love
you
that.
You know, she kind of looks like her, but she doesn't quite look like her, but that personality, that's what
right.
I mean. Like she's, but even more talkative. Like we love Bette Midler. So
okay.
Now, because she was a character, which worked, I think, in New York, but in Washington, D.C., it would be like, oh, who is this person? Because women were expected to be seen basically and not really heard.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And so when she moved to Washington, she took the town by storm. She became known as having very strong views about politics and her husband's work that included, and she was very vocal about her opinions on things such as the Vietnam War, the nominations to the U.S. Supreme Court, and much, much more.
I mean, she sounds right.
Yeah. Like she, when she, once a reporter asked her about the Vietnam War, she said, I think it stinks, which
yes!
was not in really in line with Nixon, who was very conservative president
right.
and, you know, but she's like, I'm going to be honest. She was a very authentic person.
Okay.
And very loud about it. Again, I love a loud woman. So now she also was known for calling up reporters herself
what?
With political gossip.
What? Okay.
Or information that she had gleaned from looking through John's papers.
Oh my God. Yes. Okay. I kind of love her so much for this. Okay. Yeah. Go on.
So again, when people talked about her, including Nixon, they described her as brash, crazy, brash, crazy drunk with a wild imagination.
Oh my
basically.
God, we would have so much fun hanging out with her. Okay.
Yes. And this is in a conservative sect and that
right.
kind of thing. And so she, like I said, she's a conservative woman, but she's like, well, yeah, I think it stinks. Our young people are going over there and dying and da da da. Like, she's just like, I'm telling it like a T.I. is, as we say.
Right.
Now, it was during this time also that she came to national attention when she remarked to a reporter that the D.C. peace demonstrations in 1969 had reminded her of the Russian Revolution.
Oh, shit.
After that, her notoriety just increased because, again, she's a character. And this is a woman who wanted to be an actor, too.
Right.
So she knows she's a natural. I'm telling you, she would have been a great actress.
Oh, totally.
This led to her appearing on the cover of Time magazine.
What? Okay.
In 1970 for the cover story of, quote, The Wives of Washington. So she's like the cover.
Yeah.
She also began making the appearances, the rounds on talk shows, and it earned her the nickname Martha the Mouth and the Mouth of the South. Because she had a very like Southern kind of drawl, like, I'm telling you, hilarious. Now, one author, Garrett McGrath, author of the new of a book called Watergate, A New History, he said that, quote, she was this big, loud, brash woman from Arkansas who arrives in Washington as the wife of the attorney general. Within a couple of years, she establishes herself as the most in-demand Republican speaker in the country after the president himself, end quote.
Damn. Okay, girl.
Yeah. And the 60s was kind of like a loosening up of like, like traditional societal class kind of things, too. So she was like a breath of fresh air for a lot of people. She also, though, even though Nixon didn't really like loud women.
I can see that about him. Yes.
She was a great spokesperson for his administration because she was in line with them. But she was also very likable.
Yes.
So they kind of tolerated her because she was good PR in that sense, even though Nixon's administration, nobody ever talked to the press. They were actually kind of anti-press.
But when she talked
to them, because the press loved her and she was on their side, they were like, oh, this is actually good for us. Right.
Yeah.
So Now, some people say that she was not a government official or elected politician in her own right.
Right.
But she was considered probably one of the first loudmouth pundit types.
Oh, God.
Okay. Graf also says, quote, she was celebrated by the right for her attacks and the way that she defended the president and lambasted his enemies, end quote.
Okay.
But in 2 years.
Yes.
In 1970, that would change. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because in 1972, mm-hmm. Nixon selected John to head the committee to reelect the president. And it was called CREEP.
Oh, my God.
It was small, and Martha was part of it. So she actually got a job where it was her. She said it was like her and maybe two or three other people, and they had offices. And like, because again, she had been a great ambassador for the Nixon campaign, yeah. and it was her husband's job. And she was very, very supportive of John, her husband. Okay. Now, she, in June of 1972, while at a series of fundraising events in California, John received a phone call about the burglary at the DNC headquarters in the Watergate office building.
Yep.
Which led to the Watergate scandal. So for those of you who don't know, that's what the scandal was. There was a break-in at the DNC headquarters. And then later on, they realized it was Nixon who had done it, which was the RNC. He'd be Republican, so, and he was trying to spy.
If you're a young person, what happened in the old days is that if you committed a crime and you were Republican, you still had to step down. Now, obviously, that's no longer true. You can keep running for president no matter how many crimes you've been proved to have committed. But in the olden days, they did care. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a scandal. Yeah. So they were basically in California when the news got back to them. And then this is people had to do phone calls. There's no pagers. They have to get on the plane. Yeah. So he promptly returned to Washington and left Martha in California, which she did not like. Again, she loved her husband. She always wanted to be with him. And by all accounts, he actually liked her, that she was outspoken. And again, she was very loyal and loving.
Right.
And he wasn't a man like, ugh. He seemed more reserved and more quiet. And she's like going on and on and on and on. So they were a good match. So,
yeah.
But he leaves her in California, which she was not happy about. She's like, I want to go back with you. But they were in the middle of fundraising and that kind of thing. Right. So he then, and she didn't really know what had happened. Because again, it's not like she can, they knew that something had happened, but it's not like it's, you can go on social media and get, so she's like, what's happening? She heard there was a break-in, but that's about it.
Right.
So he left her in California. She was not happy about that. And then he reportedly enlisted their security agent, a man by the name of Stephen King. he was a former FBI agent. He said to prevent Martha from learning about the break-in or talking to reporters, because again, she had the reputation of calling up reporters herself.
Yes.
She would have been a great, like, gossip columnist person. Great, like, Hedda Hopper type. So.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. But Martha learned of what had happened anyway, because it was huge news, and made several unsuccessful attempts to contact John, but he was on a plane.
Right.
She couldn't get a hold of him, and she was like, what's going on? You need to talk to me. So she eventually told one of her aides that her next call would be to the press.
Oh, shit.
And she made good on that point, because she learned called up this famed journalist of the United Press International, Helen Thomas, who was very famous at the time, who she probably had called many, many times before.
Right.
Especially when she heard that James McCord had been the CRP security director, James McCord, had also been arrested. So she's like, what is going on? What is going on and why? Hold on for just a second. So she is like, basically, she's like, tell me what's going on. They're not telling me what's going on. So she calls up the reporter. I think to figure out what's going on, but also to just talk. I think that's what was probably happening.
Well, because if she starts talking, then they're going to have to talk to her and tell her a little bit more, because they don't want her just blowing smoke. You know what I mean?
They're trying to control it, because they knew that she was a kind of a loose cannon.
Right.
And until recently, and also John realized that his wife, she actually did have a high moral code.
Good.
So she managed to get on the phone with Helen Thomas, but the phone call abruptly ended. And when Helen Thomas tried to call back, she was told by the hotel staff that Martha Mitchell was indisposed. Later on, the journalist, Helen reported that during her conversation, basically, Martha was on the phone and was like, I don't know what's going on. I think there's some dirty business of politics going on, da 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 da. But before Helen Thomas could ask her more, she heard Martha say, get away, get away. And then the phone went dead.
Oh, my God. Okay.
According to Martha later on, she was on the phone with Helen Thomas in the hotel room in Newport Beach, California.
Okay.
When Steve King, the former FBI agent, walked over and yanked the cord out of the wall. She said, Martha then said, for the next 24 hours, the guards refused to let her leave. They denied her food, physically injured her, and drugged her.
What? Oh, my God.
Presumably to keep the notorious motor mouth silent about the, quote, dirty tricks that she was starting to talk to Helen Thomas about. Now, I have to say this. Steve King later on denied the incident and went on to have an illustrious career and later became President Trump's ambassador to the Czech Republic.
Of course he did. Oh, wow. That tracks.
Now, later on after this incident, Helen Thomas reported, quote, the story got a fair amount of play, mostly on the women's pages. Maybe editors thought it was just another case of Martha being Martha and newsworthy only because it revealed a rift in a very public marriage, end quote.
Uh-huh.
So they basically was kind of like, oh, what is Martha saying? And da da da, like, oh, that's women's stuff. Oh, and it's like kind of like a little scandalous, like, oh, she's spilling the tea a little bit. And that's marriage things. It's a way to discount her.
It's gossipy and women's issues.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
She's talking about her breasts or period and stuff. Ew.
Like, or what she's saying is not important. Now,
right.
But what did follow was terrible, and it was a clear case of gaslighting. The gaslighting is textbook gaslighting, just like you see it in the movie Gaslight. So
yeah.
After everything broke with the Watergate scandal and everything, Martha told reporters that she would leave her husband unless he left politics, flat off.
Wow.
Point blank, period. And because of that, they realized that they couldn't really control her. And Nixon and his cronies really couldn't control her. So the efforts led by Nixon and her husband, we later found out, began. They basically directed the staff and anybody in the circle to disparage Martha. Now, according to Helen Thomas, she wrote, quote, about all of this, quote, back in Washington, administrative aides began hinting that Martha was hallucinating, that she was deranged, or that she was just drunk. She goes on to say that Martha, quote, was written off in part because of the misogyny of the era.
Yep.
And that is also from Garrett Graff's book as well, when he talks about this. So, now, John Mitchell did resign from running the campaign, citing Martha as the reason, because she was like, if he doesn't leave politics, I'm going to divorce him.
She's
so
right.
Publicly, he's like, yeah, I'm going to leave. And that only added to the rumors of her being crazy or having, quote, special problems that continued.
God.
So there's all these like this stuff coming out about how she's crazy. She's just drunk. Don't listen to her. Martha said that she was hurt, but she didn't know who had hurt her because she didn't know where it was coming from.
Right.
Because the attacks and then the ridicule, other people would ridicule and make fun of her at parties and stuff during this time. Like, oh, isn't she crazy? Was coming from so many different directions. It was hard to know what the source was or like, yeah, it was just very, very hard for her because she just didn't know what was going on because she's like, this thing happened to me. They wouldn't let me leave. And later on, a doctor would say he came in to give her a sedative.
Oh, my God.
So she was right. They drugged her.
They drugged her.
Shut her up.
Yes.
Now, ironically, Martha Mitchell disdained feminists, but she was in her... So in a way, she became a feminist hero to a lot of women. because she was not bound by the conventional roles assigned to her. She was a woman who spoke her mind and was silenced, according to Jefferson Morley, the author of Scorpion's Dance, The President, The Spy Master, and Watergate.
Interesting.
Now, despite what happened in California, Martha still believed that John was not involved in any wrongdoing and defended him against everything about the accusations, and including during a civil suit against the committee to reelect the president.
Okay.
But according to one of the directors of the film, The Martha Mitchell Effect, which is available on Netflix, I highly recommend it. It's only about 40 minutes. The director, Anne Alverge, I might be mispronouncing that. I think I am.
That's okay.
But according to Anne, Martha loved John and wanted to protect him, but she also had a high moral compass and saw the dirty tricks that she was becoming more privy to and was repulsed by it. So she wanted to speak truth to power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels very feminist to me. I'm sorry, Martha. I know you don't like feminists, but...
But see, I think back then they were demonizing feminists as being like man-hating, non-bra-wearing, not ladies, basically. And so a woman her generation be like, well, I'm not that. And it's like, no, but what we're saying is you should be able to do what you want to do and say what you want to say.
Yeah. Like I saw a thing. It's like, okay, for women who don't like feminists, what rights would you like to return?
I like that.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, because gaslighting is very powerful, especially when it's coming from very powerful people, it kind of worked. Martha, she didn't know what was going on. So she kind of retreated back to her home and she stopped talking and calling up the press as much as she had done before.
Okay.
But she always said, and especially in the documentary, that she thought the idea was to get people to stop talking about Watergate in general and just to get Nixon reelected. Okay. And it worked. Nixon was reelected.
Yep.
The Watergate story basically dried up. It died down for a while. But when James McCord came forward and pointed the finger directly at John Mitchell, her husband, the game was on and everything exploded. And like, and go and watch All the President's Men. It's excellent movie. Excellent, excellent movie. It breaks all of this down because hashtag not historians. But after James McCord came out, this reinvigorated Martha and she began talking to the press again. Because at first she thought, oh, this is ridiculous. They're scapegoating John.
Okay.
McCord is coming out and now they're trying to blame everything on John.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to get into that again. Go and watch All the President's Men. Look up on this and also watch the documentary. The Martha Mitchell Effect is really, really good. But eventually the cards came tumbling down. Nixon resigned. But after all of this came out, I'm sure she's asking him questions. She's still reading his papers and his studies. Right. She's still doing all of that. So in 1973, John left Martha.
Oh, he left her.
He left her. He was eventually convicted of conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and perjury, and spent 19 months in prison.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said, he told reporters, quote, it could have been hell of a lot worse. They could have sentenced me to spend the rest of my life with Martha.
Wow. What an asshole.
Yeah. Now, side note, after he left her, she called up Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, who are covered in All the President's Men, played by Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. Okay. So she called them up. She called up and Bob answered the phone and she offered them access to John's home office. She basically called them up. It was like, the son of a bitch left me. So they were like, what?
It's okay. Come on over. I'll make tea.
Right. They got on the first flight they could and they got there.
Yeah, they did.
They cleared it with lawyers and they got there and they said when they arrived, she had a big martini glass waiting for them. She takes them into the room and she's like, it's up there. So it's like a really tall ceiling. So they went up on the ladder, got all the books and papers and some of John's checkbooks.
Oh.
And took them back to the office and they were like, Oh my God. Because they were like, we couldn't reveal our source because if we say it came from a soon-to-be bitter ex-wife, then it would lose right. all kind of credibility. But this, they hit the jackpot.
But that's, yeah.
Yeah. However
She's
you get
like,
it, right?
I'll order a pizza. Go ahead.
So now John's lawyers eventually found out about this and they asked for all the materials back. So they quickly had everything Xeroxed and returned
of
the
course.
Originals. So,
yeah. Oh, here now, you go.
like I said, James McCord and his whole name is James W. McCord Jr. was later also later convicted as a Watergate conspirator, mm-hmm. backed up by Martha Story. In a 1975 New York Times article, and he said, quote, Martha's story is true. Basically, the woman was kidnapped, he said, in an attempt to keep her unaware of Watergate.
Yeah.
So he backed wow. her up in, even in 1975.
That's
now
good.
Eventually, Nixon, like I said, resigned from the presidency in August of 1974, and he blamed Martha for Watergate.
Good.
He
told, it was Martha's idea. To break
no,
into
he blamed
the...
her no, for getting the word out there. So in the famous interviews with David Frost, he
yes.
said, quote, I'm convinced if it hadn't been for Martha, and God rest her soul, because her heart was a good person. She just had a mental and emotional problem that nobody knew about. If it hadn't been for Martha, there'd have been no Watergate, end quote. So he's still trying to be like, oh, she's
okay.
just crazy.
Okay, sweetheart. If you hadn't committed a crime, there would have been no crime.
Exactly.
That's how that works. Okay.
Now, okay. and side note, after he, because in 74, the House Judiciary Committee approved three articles of impeachment against Nixon, but he resigned
yes.
Instead, like I said, in August of 74, becoming the only U.S. president to do so. His successor, Gerald Ford, pardoned yeah. him in September of 1974. So.
Yeah.
Now, just 2 years after he resigned, Martha died of bone marrow cancer on May 31st, 1976, at the age of 57.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah. And, you know, after her death, her role in cracking the corruption case, historians say, was largely forgotten. Quote, after her death, she was largely consigned to a footnote in the Nixon years and the administration, says, end quote, says Garrett Graff. And he goes on to say, quote, it's really only within these last 5 to 7 years that she's been resurrected and sort of recentered in the telling of the Watergate story, and that she was a very central figure of the Nixon
yeah.
White House, both on its way up and on its way down, end quote. Now, all these many years later, her story, like Graff has said, has been revisited. So in 2017, there was a Slate podcast called Slow Burn, where they covered basically Martha's life and her interactions and her role in the Watergate scandal. And then in 2022, Starz had a limited series called Gaslit, starring Julia Roberts as Martha Mitchell.
I need to watch this right now.
Yes. And as well as the aforementioned The Martha Mitchell Effect, which is a documentary that's currently available on Netflix, which all of which are redeeming her reputation, because she was basically just yeah. written off as a loudmouth, crazy lady who had just fantastical, crazy stories of people drugging her. And it all turned out to be true.
Wow.
In closing about Martha, I just want to read this quote from Garrett Graff, again,
okay.
the author of Watergate, A New History. He says, quote, Martha was written out of the story and forgotten for most of the last half century. She warned America about what was about to envelop the country, and she was ignored. She deserves a much bigger role in the way we tell the story of Watergate, end quote.
Nice.
So that is Martha Mitchell.
You know,
the loudmouth of the South.
Yeah. Listen, this is where I feel like we listen. I'm a diehard Democrat. I'm going to vote blue, and you should too, 1,000% down the
right.
line. However, if you look at like people and mm-hmm. also our history of politics, and it's more complex. Like,
yeah.
you know, right now, obviously, we have to save our democracy, right?
Yeah.
But in general, like I will never vote for a Republican. That's just never going to happen. But there was like an era where like, okay, there were some reasons you liked him, and that's okay. Right.
Well, and they were the party of law and order, right? Like, right. Moral high. Basically, they were saying they were Martha, but Nixon was not.
But they're not, exactly. And yeah. I feel like she also kind of bought into what they were selling.
Right.
Even though that's not actually who they were.
Nixon was a hypocrite. Like, and she did say at one time, she was like, well, I just, because they were like, well, you, again, in the documentary, The Martha Mitchell Effect, it's very short. It's like 40 minutes or something. And she basically, they interviewed her and she was just like, no, I think that politicians should be held to account and stop lying. And she basically was the poster child for what they said that they were, which is why she was in that party. Right. And, you know, and she, as much as she said, you know, John was sophisticated and so intelligent, she really fell in love with him because she thought he also was of high moral code. Right. And it never would occur to her that he was not.
Yeah.
It never would occur to her that, and Nixon in general is interesting because he wanted to be president so bad, and he ran, twice or something, like he
two you know, times I think before he got became president something
yeah
like
that. Famously, you know, he went up against JFK and he was sweating and he came off as old, and you know, and JFK came off as young and vibrant, and you know, he couldn't compete with that, and he was just so desperate. And he was very much aware of Martha. They were afraid of Martha from the beginning. But like I said, in the beginning, she was like a great advocate for them. Yeah. You know, their own personal PR person, because they didn't really speak to the press. But he began bugging the White House, which is led to his downfall. Mm-hmm. So between 71 and 73, in some of these recordings, he mentions Martha directly more than 100 times.
Really?
So it goes to tell you the power of being a motor mouth, the power, the feminine power of talking too much. And but she was so transparent and authentic and open because she was like, I don't have anything to hide because I'm not a crook. Right. And that's why he's just like, I'm not a crook. That's his famous like.
Oh, my God. Of course.
Yeah. I'm not a crook, because people are like, you're a crook. You're low down. You do dirty tricks. And it never would occur to her that her husband would do this. And I think he kind of like, he fell in line because he was directly involved in the Watergate scandal. We now know. Yeah. He was very much aware of everything that was happening, but he would never let on to Martha that that's what was happening, because she would have, he was afraid she'd tell his business, but she would have been like, you are a crook. Like, she would have been like,
you're criminal. I'm leaving.
You're criminal. I'm leaving. Right.
And like, I'm calling the cops and I'm telling them right now.
Yeah, because I think they're fine with women leaving. They're just not fine with her running her mouth. So, but I do think, like you said, it's ironic that she's like, oh, those feminists. But when I talk to older women, I realize, I was like, yeah, they think feminist means you don't shave your legs, you don't put on makeup,
you hate men, angry.
You're a lesbian. Like, they think... Even though there's nothing wrong with being a lesbian, let's be clear.
No, but like, they think you're a lesbian in response to your feminism, not because you are sexually attracted to women, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know, but like, none of
just
that is
man-hating.
Real.
They think all feminists are man-hating. And it's like, no, because again, this is during a time women in the United States couldn't open up their own bank accounts until 1974.
Yeah.
So Martha couldn't even open up her own bank account. No.
Which is why, like, why didn't you leave him? Because she couldn't open up her own bank account.
But
I also think
within their marriage, he liked that she was loudmouth and like, and because she's, I wouldn't even say loudmouth. She's so likable. She's so like fun. She's always smiling. She's almost always smiling when she's talking. She definitely was that precocious kid who should have gone into acting.
Yeah. Listen, he liked her until she got in his way.
He liked her until she got in his way. Yeah. Yeah.
And
when he could no longer use her gifts for the gab.
Yep.
for their benefit. And, you know, because he left her in 73 and it broke in 72. So he left her within the year. And I can only imagine that she was probably devastated, because then once he did that, she really realized, oh, he's up to his eyeballs in this. Like, you know, and I can imagine, I just want to know, be the fly on the wall when he's trying to tell her to be quiet.
Oh my God.
But one of the reasons she probably loved him is that she didn't have to be quiet within her marriage up until that point.
Did he remarry? Then, I bet you he did.
I didn't even, because I didn't really care. But also, I would imagine that she probably didn't know. She probably thought he didn't know that they drugged her when he left, not realizing that he probably directed them.
He suggested it.
To do whatever, give her a sedative. But I know that's how they characterize it. But it's like, no, they drugged her and
that's
kept her against
roofie.
Her will.
They roofied her. That's what is.
I mean, they came in with the syringe, so she saw it happening. But it's like, you know, because back then that's what they used to do to women. Like, you know, and I will say, particularly well-off white women, a lot of times they would just characterize you as a drunk. Oh, she's a drunk. She doesn't even know. It's like PhD level gaslighting.
Yeah.
You know, because the staff's involved. They're all been like, oh, Martha, she's just talking. Do you really? And I will say, the story sounds crazy.
But it's
real. In 1972, if you're like, somebody's like, they drugged me, because she's like, these motherfuckers, they drugged me, and you'd be like, did this really happen? But I would imagine reporters are sort of like, well, the lead she's given us in the past have turned out to be true, but this sounds so crazy. Because Watergate basically, to white people, I would say white voters, really opened their eyes up to like how these so-called respectable people could be downright criminals and crooks.
Right. Because white people really did feel like
they bought into it.
People who run our country are patriotic, good people who want to do the right thing all the time. Because they're still around. Those people are still around. You know.
Yeah. So that, but to your point earlier, the Republican Party was like, oh, you got to step down. Like, we know you're the president, but motherfucker, we can't have this. You can't be like, it's like with the Christine Keeler thing. The Conservative Party in England were like, you got to step down. You can't, this is not a good look. But now all of that pretense is gone out the window in the modern politics. So
people have shirts. I'm voting for the criminal. All right.
Yeah. After 2016, all of that went out of the out of the window. So that is Martha Mitchell.
Thank you so much for her. I feel like I've learned my whole childhood has been upended by the truth of this story.
She's a fun time too.
She is.
I really wish she had lived to be, 57. She was quite a character and definitely notorious. So
yeah.
Love Martha Mitchell.
Oh my God, she's amazing. Thank you.
Amazing.
For her.
My pleasure. All right, guys, that wraps it up for another episode of Notorious Women Podcast. And like I said at the top of the show, remember to follow us on all the things. Spread the word about the show. If you like us and want to get your friends and family and loved ones in on it, copy the link and send it to them.
Yes,
copy
please.
The link and send it to them. Also, if you want to support the show financially, you can do that at patreon.com/notorious women. That's patreon.com/notorious women. And Miriam, how else can they find us and support the show?
Y'all, we have an Instagram page. It's Notorious Women Podcast. It's very simple. Come follow us. Come like us. Come talk to us. You can DM us there. You can also email us at notoriouswmpod@gmail.com if you have like longer things. You can also find us on YouTube, you guys. So we have a YouTube page that we can listen to all the episodes. You can talk to us there. Then that is how you can find us.
Yeah. All right, guys. We will see you. And also, if you have someone that you'd like us to cover, or if you have something you want to add about our women, You can always do that on Instagram, TikTok. Can they leave messages on TikTok? Yeah,
no,
you can.
They cannot.
Oh, you can't. Oh, okay. Yeah. You can leave it in the comments, though, right?
Here's the thing. Go to Instagram, y'all. Let's be real about what we check. And it's Instagram and it's our email. You can also comment on YouTube, too.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Please leave a comment there because we're trying to build that up. But if you guys have a programming note, if you have a correction, because hashtag not historians, you can always do that on any of the things that we mentioned before. But thank you so much for joining us and we will see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.